the Islamic State network very much resembles at this particular stage the Al-Qaeda network, in that the center of the organization is primarily responsible to conduct, to keep the ideology together, to keep the brand going, right? To put out statements that the war is, or the fight is continuing, to make sure that it accepts the pledges of allegiance from groups and individuals around the world, and put out propaganda. But the operational control is then very much transferred downwards. So I would be very surprised if we find out subsequently that this attack has been in detail in some way prepared or planned anywhere around ISIL center in Syria and Iraq. I would assume it is far more likely that there was an idea to conduct a terror attack in Sri Lanka by fighters who've been with ISIL, possibly even from Sri Lanka, having fought with ISIL, returned to their country, and then bring this idea to the attention of the center. The center said, go ahead. Maybe the center sends some kind of financial support. But then the operational planning is done in country by the group's network in at the actual area where the attacks are going to be happening. This also makes a lot of sense if you think about communication security and the ability of other services to disrupt such terror attacks. If it's planned in country, the risk that it comes to light via some international communication is, of course, much reduced.
So it's your belief then, by extraction from what you've told me, that this was not something that was planned as retaliation for what happened in New Zealand. This is likely something that was planned long before.
Obviously, ISIL is claiming that this is, of course, the case. But looking at the scale of this, the amount of individuals that must have been involved, the amount of explosive material that needed to be procured, assuming that in Sri Lanka you just cannot go to the supermarket and buy Semtex, right? All of this takes time. Obviously, from a propaganda standpoint, very unfortunately, the Christchurch terrorist has done a great favor to all of the other side of the terrorist equation, because they now can claim pretty much anything as a retaliation for his horrible acts. But I mean, the complexity of this operation does not look to me as if this could be stood up in a couple of weeks. And it's not that long ago since Christchurch.
Tactics. What kind of tactics, hallmarks, trademarks do you see and capabilities in this particular attack? Because one of the things that stood out to me, and I've been talking to you for years from your days as with the Al-Qaeda, Taliban, ISIS monitoring team at the UN, about tactics and organizations and how they use and deploy tactics. But looking at what I've learned from you and others about this, it seemed that there was a great degree of success when it came to the devices that were used, as opposed to at least what we know of, devices malfunctioning, the types of devices, the variety of devices that were used, your observations, what have they told you about this situation?
Yeah, the success of pretty much all of the attacks succeeding and all of the devices functioning, plus, you know, several other functioning devices having been found near the airport and in other places on the island, I really can only point to a very great likelihood of someone with actual battlefield experience and having been building these devices for a long time and multiple times is behind the design of this. As you have pointed out, luckily, in many instances in Europe and in America, attacks were not deadly simply because the device didn't function at all or misfunctioned, it burned rather than exploded. This was not the case even once, as far as we know, in Sri Lanka at this point. So that means someone who has done this many times over, who knows all the mistakes that you can make, who has tried and tested all the various methods of building a what essentially is an improvised explosive device, an IED, has been behind this. This is extremely unlikely to have been conducted solely by people who learned this from reading a book or searching online. However, if I may just do one little remark here in brackets, the fact that the government of Sri Lanka decided to shut down all social media immediately after the attack is unfortunately, in my opinion, a sad testimony to the growing trust gap between governments and the tech industry, and that governments simply no longer have the confidence that the tech industry can by itself limit the fallout from such incidents. We have tomorrow here in New York a big event with the European Union as well as the UN from the Counter-Extremism Project, focusing on finding smart regulatory and technological solutions in order to prevent this growing gap of confidence from growing even more, because shutting down social media is not helpful to anyone who is concerned about freedom of speech. But that was just a caveat. So I think, just in brackets, I think this is a clear indication that they had outside help, and very consistently from the very beginning, the authorities in Sri Lanka said that there was an international dimension to it. There is a lot of criticism inside Sri Lanka right now about lack of security, not reacting to intelligence information they may have gotten beforehand. Be it as it may, Southeast Asia was a target, and ISIL would have taken advantage within the near future of any opportunity, Sri Lanka or outside Sri Lanka, to set again a mark in that region, because they need to regain the upper hand on the propaganda front in Southeast Asia after their very clear and very damaging defeat in the city of Marawi. So everyone has been actually waiting for the next big thing in Southeast Asia.
Dr. Hans Jacob Schindler, Senior Director at the Counter-Extremism Project. J.J. Green, WTOP News.